Hey there, everybody. It is November 8th, 2012, and you are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line. Send that email on over to ken@thisshowisogay.com. Strolling over to thisshowisogay.com, you can go there and listen to every show we've ever made for the past 4 years. And of course, find out what's happening with our little gay radio show that could. And then stroll on over to the Facebook. Join the thousands and thousands of other people who have liked us there. You click like, you like us, we of course like you. So much to get to on this week's episode. Time to get started. Let me introduce our first guest. Troy Ronis is a nationally acclaimed writer, advocate, national and international activist and educator on issues of eating disorders, self-esteem, recovery, faith, LGBT issues, and healthy body image. Troy serves as the inaugural United States male representative for the National Eating Disorders Association Junior Board, the United States Male Advisory Board member, and a facilitator for the Global Eating Disorders Organization Mentor Connect. Education Director, my God, Troy, there's a lot. Education Director for Normal in Schools, Inc., Speaker for Youth Move National, and former Advisory Board Member for the National Association of Males with Eating Disorders. Troy, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
That was a lot of credentials, my friend.
Well, it seems like a lot, but I think it's more or less just paying my blessings forward, and I'm happy to do it.
There you go. There you go. Well, we have much to discuss. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
How did you come to do this work? I know that one of your foci is indeed eating disorders, and I was doing my research and watching some YouTube videos, and you come at this in, I would say, about as genuine way as possible. Tell everyone how you came to be involved in talking to people about self-esteem and eating disorders.
Absolutely. Well, I started struggling with body image and exercise addiction and an eating disorder when I was about 19 years old, and ended up going to treatment for those issues. And as soon as I came out of treatment, which was around 6 months of residential treatment, I decided it was time to hit the road running, hit it hard, and to really spread the message that eating disorders don't affect just women, they don't affect just heterosexual individuals or young girls, that it affects many people in our country and across the world, and it's something that definitely needs to be addressed.
Now, you talked about the disparity between the genders, because again, we think eating disorders, and I don't know who the we is, let's go with popular society, we think eating disorders, our mind immediately goes to women.
Sure.
How do we combat that?
I think it involves a lot of people just coming forward and talking about it, and it's very easy to say, well, this person or that person should just come out and talk about it, but we have to remember the stigma that's attached to an eating disorder and mental illness in general. I would say that men specifically have a harder time coming forward, not only because society views it as a woman's issue, but that it also it is a perception that you might be weak or can't handle things on your own, and so I think those are two really big issues in terms of men and coming forward and why we really need to talk about it.
Well, let's start with the personal and then let's make some global statements. For you personally, to what degree was an LGBT identity playing into some of the things that you needed to work on?
You know, that's a very interesting question. I actually, while I was in treatment and doing therapy, I didn't address issues of my sexuality until much, much later, after I'd actually come home. And little did I realize that faith and my sexuality and various other issues, from perfectionism to body image struggles and a few other emotional issues, were at work. And it was more or less an interpretation of my faith that I made that was unrealistic, and that really made me have a lot of self-doubt and be very self-conscious about myself, and that was all woven into emotional hurt and trauma that really fueled my eating disorder.
Yeah, and then we look at more nationally in some of the national stats, and they're kind of all over the place. A lot of these studies are citing this one report from 2007 that says, yes, gay men are disproportionately at higher risk for eating disorders, but nobody's really sure why, Troy.
This is actually something that I'm working on right now with my thesis in graduate school. In most of the reports that you do hear, you hear that, oh, well, the majority of men who do struggle with an eating disorder, whether it's binge eating disorder or anorexia or any of the various types, that they do happen to be gay, when in fact, it's not so much that gay males as opposed to their, you know, heterosexual counterparts do have more eating disorders, but they're more apt to come forward than their heterosexual counterparts. Now, why that is, we don't really know at this point, but the numbers for men are staggering. Up to 30 million men in the United States struggle with some form of an eating disorder, and that's why this issue really needs to be talked about and destigmatized.
Now, did you encounter that stigma as you were seeking treatment? My assumption is that all the folks who were supporting you didn't really need the convincing that men could have an eating disorder.
Right. Actually, a lot of my family and friends were very shocked when they found out that I was struggling with an eating disorder. But in hindsight, they were very good in terms of being supportive with me in learning as much as they possibly could and then just accepting the fact that this is something that not everybody does struggle with, but we're going to be here for our son, our brother, our cousin, our nephew, whomever it may be, and we're going to see him all the way through this. And I was fortunate enough to have the support system that not a lot of people do.
Yeah. Now, you did what, of course, every single one of us does every single day. You went on Dr. Phil and talked about this.
Yes, and to be honest, when it came to going on Dr. Phil, it was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. I went on the show to talk about my issues with exercise and body image. I, at that point, didn't feel that I had an eating disorder, but when I did appear on the show, more and more of a realization came to me that something much deeper was going on, and ended up going and getting treatment for that, and I'm very thankful for that opportunity. And now, as I said in the beginning of the segment, I really want to use the gift that I was given and hopefully let people know that whether you have an eating disorder or you're struggling with disordered eating or body image issues, that you can get better and there is hope.
What kind of response did you get from being on Dr. Phil? Because I don't know if you know, Troy, a lot of people watch that show.
A lot of people do watch that show, and one of the biggest things for me is at the time I was teaching high school and elementary students when I appeared on that show. That was one of the reasons why I really didn't want to go on, because I was supposed to be their role model, their mentor, and their coach. And so when I came home, I was suspecting maybe some negative feedback from parents or uneasiness with my students and their reactions to me, but they were very, very good to me, and it actually created a few bonds with students that I didn't have before. And so I think there's a reason for everything. I think I went through that for a purpose, and I think that I'll never regret doing it, because I know that a lot of positives did come out of it.
Yeah. Now, talk to me a little bit about families, because I've been reading so much of what you've written, and you wrote it in one of your pieces, quote, "I'd like to say that at the end of the day, mom and dad, your child's illness isn't something you can control, and you couldn't have done a better job than what you already have." Talk to me about the importance of parents and families in supporting their children who either are experiencing disordered eating, the addiction to exercise, which we'll talk about in a second, but what is the role of parents and families in helping their children get through this?
I think parents are in a very difficult situation, because it's just like a cancer diagnosis, in my opinion, because you're seeing your loved one go through something and you really can't do anything about it other than be very honest with that individual, because eating disorders are life-threatening. After having a heart attack and my organs beginning to shut down, you know, we come to the realization that they aren't just issues with food or with exercise or body image, but they're life-threatening illnesses. And for parents, they need to be very, very assertive and upfront with their children. But a lot of people that don't have a child with an eating disorder look to those parents and they say, what did they do wrong? And those parents are already thinking that, and they're already wondering what they could have done better.
Yeah.
And so the one regret, if anything, out of the entire ordeal that I will say is parents worry about their children anyway. They worry about them until they're no longer here. And so the one regret I do have is that I can't take that extra worry from my parents that I will someday go back to where I was.
Right.
But they have been absolutely amazing, and if there are any parents out there who are listening who do have a child or may have a child in the future, it's not their fault. It's a multitude of factors, and they have absolutely nothing to blame themselves for.
I was going to give you an opportunity to give a special shout out to your parents, but you took it. You didn't even need me to give it to you.
Yeah, they've been absolutely amazing, and I'm here because of them. So.
There you go. There you go. Well, this is another quote from Troy. This is another thing that you wrote, because I want to talk about flaws. You wrote, quote, do you accept yourself? Well, you question, actually. Do you accept yourself as you are, flaws, illness, past, and all? We actually don't accept ourselves when we aren't in tune or are muting the thoughts and feelings at our core. We often hate the barriers in our lives, and we hate what it does to pull us down, but we believe that's who we really are when we aren't truly listening. Now, one of the things, and to be very particular to the LGBT community, one of the things that makes this so difficult, I think we do a great job at covering, oh, you know, the media representation of women is so horrid on the cover of Vogue, and those aren't real people. But I would say that the gay male community, often not much better. If you look on the cover of Out magazine, and even the Advocate at times, you see what feels like unrealistic expectations put on us by the gay male community as well.
Yes, absolutely. And that's one of the things that I really would like to dive into perhaps in the future when it comes to different areas of the LGBT community, because I think we're diverse, and that's part of the reason that makes us so wonderful. But at the same time, I think when it comes to television, when it comes to the media, when it comes to, as you say, magazine covers, I found a very good quote the other day, and it was, we like to compare ourselves at home and the way we really are to someone else's promotional reel. And so me looking at a magazine, I'm thinking of myself versus a very, very perfected picture that doesn't actually exist in real life. And so when we look at those, we internalize those feelings of I'm not good enough and I have to be better, when in reality those individuals are nowhere near perfect and no one will ever be. And so for males, especially in the LGBT community, I think that we really need to be there to support each other and to not put the standards out there that are unrealistic and unattainable.
Yeah, so difficult though. I remember, I think it was Out magazine, maybe a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, did a whole photo spread on real gay men. And let's just, you know, they don't have to have every single ab accentuated. But at the same time, I think instead of showing 6-packs and 8-packs, there were guys with maybe 2 and 4 packs. And you looked at this photo spread and thought, well, wait a second. That doesn't feel so real either. So you just get kind of bombarded with it sometimes.
Well, and I think we become numb to the fact that when we do see those pictures, we're almost turned off by when we see someone who is quote-unquote normal or original, because we are so used to seeing things that are beyond perfection and don't actually exist. And so I think it's a great thing to be promoting what real people out there look like, but we have to really reflect on ourselves and say, hey, we can't be beating ourselves up or the people on those magazines up, because that's what's actually out there.
We put out there to our Facebook friends, you know, look, these are some of the issues we're going to cover on this week's show. What do you guys think? And we had one of our listeners write in, and I just thought this was such a great comment. One of the things that these representations in the LGBT community have done is to redefine the word average. And so that, you know, folks who just aren't average in any way, who are in great shape, but because they don't conform to what we're seeing on these magazine covers, on the cover of Out, now in their personal ads and whatnot, label themselves as average, which for other people is code word for, you know, I never leave bed and never go to the gym ever. So that was such a fascinating little piece of a word that we seem to be redefining now.
Well, absolutely. And I think that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I personally believe that the LGBT community is, for the most part, very self-conscious from a very early age. We know that we're different. We know that we have a lot of obstacles to get over in our lives and to really struggle with. And so we focus on what we can control, and that is often the physical. That's often our work, our school. And so when we don't succeed up to our highest of expectations that we do put on ourselves, because we are our worst critic, we set ourselves up for failure, and society sets us up for failure in that aspect. And so being normal, whatever definition you want to give normal, is perfectly fine. And no pun intended, but that's just the way that we're supposed to be. And I really enjoyed that comment from Facebook. I think that's spot on.
Yeah. definitely, definitely. And I love this too. You have a whole one of your pieces is all about being heard and the difficulty in being heard, and not only the struggle to be heard, but the weariness that you associate with not being heard. And you write in here, I'm tired of every news blip having to have that shock and awe factor to be considered news. I'm tired of males being labeled gay or weak if they struggle with body image or eating disorders. This label only adds to the anxiety and fear to come forward for help. Mostly though, I'm tired of not being heard. And I think that echoes a lot of what folks are feeling across the country. I know a lot of our listeners write in with very similar sentiments. How can we get, if nothing, our show is about getting voices out there, how can we be heard on these issues, Troy?
I really think it's not about confrontation a lot of the times with these issues. And I think looking back on that piece and thinking back to when I wrote that, it was a lot of the times we do like to shout and we do like to talk about things as much as humanly possible, but we can only control so much. It's how it's interpreted by other people that really defines what kind of message we put out there. And so I think when I termed it as I'm very, very tired, it was saying the same thing, but the reaction not being any different. And I think for the gay community, for the LGBT community, to really talk about the issues that drive us, equality, basic human rights, being able to go to work and not have to be in fear, go to school and not be in fear. I think education is the biggest piece, and I think trying to relate everything at that human level, even with people that don't want to understand, that try to understand, I think being as compassionate and as open as possible is the way that we have to get there. And it's a lot of hard work, and it's going to be a long road, but by doing it together, I think we can really make a lot of progress.
Love it. Love it. Now, as you mentioned, you are in the process of furthering your own education, are you not?
Yes, sir. I will hopefully be crossing my fingers, and hopefully I still have all of my hair by the time December rolls around. I'll be finished here in December. So.
That's very exciting. But finished with what? Tell everybody.
I'll be finished with graduate school, having my master's in cognitive science and education. So I'm very blessed, very excited, and can't wait to see what the future holds.
All right, so let's start that PhD in January.
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Come on, Troy, join me.
Well, we'll see. That's all I can say. We'll see.
So what are you hoping to do? So you'll finish this master's, and you're writing a thesis. I didn't write a thesis for my master's. I always hear about people doing this.
Well, where did you go to school? I need to get in on that.
I'm telling you, NYU. Go to NYU. You don't have to write a thesis for your master's.
Well, I would really like to be an educational specialist for an organization, a nonprofit. I would really like to work for a university or a healthcare system and really work on patient education and community outreach.
Nice. Nice. What types of fulfillment do you think that you are going to get out of that? I love when people are pursuing their passions.
I really like to work individually, one-on-one with people. I also am an educator. I love being in groups and really relating and getting that phenomenological experience where I get to see and listen to people's lived experience and hopefully not only make myself better, but hopefully transition some other things out there and hope to change some lives with that. And so any way that I can do that, that's where I hope I'm headed.
Nice, nice. So for our listeners who are struggling, and I do want to hit on really quick, because we don't spend nearly enough time talking about exercise addiction, which is a very real problem out there.
Very much so. And most people assume that eating disorder is defined by being either rail thin or binging and purging every day, when in fact going to the gym after I ate a large meal for hours on end, the overcompensation, that's an issue that we have to discuss. That's part of disordered eating and over-exercise. A lot of the time, I don't know about LGBT community members specifically in the female population, but with the male population, it's deemed more acceptable because guys are often seen in the gym more and it's deemed healthy,
right,
which puts them at a disadvantage, whereas girls, it seemed, is a little more, it might open a few more eyes just because when we see girls in the gym, we tend to assume that they may have an eating disorder if they are very thin, but the biggest thing about this is that you don't have to look one way or the other. You can be underweight, average weight, or overweight and still struggle with an eating disorder or disordered eating. And so we really need to be on the lookout for various trends when it comes to what magazines or different organizations are pushing, especially when it comes to exercise.
Yeah, I even look at, I mean, the ads for these gay cruises are insane. You know, I play tennis 5 days a week. I do my gym time. I'm feeling reasonably healthy and fit and whatnot. And I look at some of these cruises, these advertisements for these gay male cruises, and I think, there's no way I'm going to go on one of those. They obviously don't cater to people like me. And that's crazy.
Yep. I was just going to point out that I didn't have good body image all throughout high school or college. It took me a long time, 3 or 4 years in therapy and just self-reflection to get to a point at where I'm at now. And going on a cruise or being at a big gathering such as one of those would probably still to this day make me nervous, just because the overwhelming emphasis on how well you have to look physically. And I share your sentiment there, definitely.
Except they're supposed to be fun. So let's just make the commitment right now that Troy and Ken are going on a cruise and we'll help each other through it.
Absolutely. I'm there if you're there.
You got to finish the thesis first, though.
Yeah, I suppose. And then my PhD. Maybe the cruise isn't even an option. So.
We can get that dissertation done right there on the cruise. I'm all for things like that. So
I'm
if
sure
you
we can find topics.
Oh, without question. I think the narrowing of topics is where the problem is going to be. So you are one of our listeners who is struggling, thinking, gosh, I'm in the middle of nowhere, or maybe I'm in a really urban place, but I certainly have the internet. To where would you direct folks who are looking for more support services?
There are several information sources out there on the internet. First, it's nationaleatingdisorders.org. They have outreach services in almost, I believe it's in every state. We work very hard to get you the resources you need. There's somethingfishy.org that has providers in every state as well. I would say if you are looking to speak with somebody, find someone that you're very comfortable with, and that will keep things confidential for you. But don't hesitate if you're questioning that there is an issue, there more than likely is. So just go to someone that you know that you can trust and really use your voice, because that's your most powerful tool.
Absolutely. Now, for you and from other things you've heard, was it important for you to experience other males in recovery, to be working with professional males in recovery, or for you did it just not matter at all?
No, it very much mattered for me. In fact, I only went to one treatment center, and that was Rogers Memorial Hospital in Wisconsin. And I was there on an all-male unit, and they specialized specifically with males, and we were in an all-male unit, as I said. And so that's the only setting I've ever been used to. But from the studies and the research that have come out of there and statistics, those types of environments where males are with males and females are specifically with females in their own age groups, things turn out very, very well. Why? Because I'm able to sit there and see another guy, whether gay or straight, and know that he is probably experiencing the same issues that I am. And being able to talk about that and find support systems throughout treatment is very, very big.
Huge. That's huge. Is there any way, gosh, I just want the magic bullet for, now I know that if this existed, you know, obviously it would be great. It's just particularly for, look, it's, this show is so gay, so we have a particular passion for our LGBT community, who experience so much discrimination all over the place and feelings of inequality, for them to not feel good about themselves physically, you know, about their own bodies, which obviously is tied to how accepting their communities are. I just wish there was that magic bullet where we could snap our fingers and say, well, you know, you can't change your communities all the time, but gosh, we want you to feel good about yourselves.
Yeah, life is a puzzle, but we're getting there one piece at a time. Find the qualities that make you, your personality and your quirks and all those things are what really make you unique to this world. And like I said, we're a diverse conglomerate, and we are a very powerful voice. And this is one of the opportunities that we do have to help each other out and help our allies and straight counterparts as well. We really can lead the charge in figuring out how to help people with not only self-esteem and eating disorders, but accepting ourselves in a society that doesn't really seem like we really want to. And I think we can do wonderful, wonderful work, and we definitely have the power to do it.
Nice. Now, what if folks want to follow you and find out about all the cool things that you, sir, are working on?
Well, I would be absolutely honored if anybody took interest. Find me on the Huffington Post or Facebook. I'm active on there and Twitter as well, and it's not hard to find me. I think there's only one Troy Ronas in the United States.
Nice.
So kudos to my parents again. but it's first name dot last name, and I look forward to meeting you.
Awesome. Awesome. And he's in one of the Dakotas, folks, which I learned right before the show is an actual state.
Yes, it was. It actually just joined a few years ago. We're trying to get all the electronic stuff up and running.
You'll get
we
there.
We have television, and now I'm using one of those things without a cord. It's called a phone.
Nice.
And everything's working out great.
So. Awesome. Awesome. And if you folks want to hear more of this vaudeville routine, the Ken and Troy Show will be coming to a gay cruise near you. And we'll be working on that soon. We'll be working on that soon. Troy, what an absolute pleasure. I mean, gosh, the thing that we focus on this show for the past 4 years are people who are using their voice to make a difference. And I'm not sure I can think of a better example of someone using their voice to speak out, to talk about their own experiences, to help bolster people who are struggling out there. This is life-saving work, my friend.
Well, I just want to say thank you so much for having me on the program, and I've said it before and I'll say it again, it's never been about me or my story, but it's about that message and getting that message out there to the individuals who not only desperately need it, but desperately deserve it. And so thank you very much for having me, and I look forward to hopefully working with you again in the future.
Troy Ronas, go write your thesis right this very second.
Done.
What an absolute pleasure. Keep doing what you're doing, sir.
All right, thank you so much.
Thanks, Troy.
Yes, take care.
Folks, and we are back. Well, in 4 years of This Show Is So Gay and hundreds of guests from governors to executive directors to everyday heroes, no one has appeared more on our airwaves than singer-songwriter Eric Hyman. And now he's back because he has a new project that we want you to help fund. Eric Hyman, for like the 48th time, welcome back to This Show Is So Gay.
Thanks. The 48th time is the best.
Isn't it, though? 47 was okay, but 48, I think, is where we really start peaking. Where are we peaking?
Thank you for having me on.
Well, now, this is very exciting. I don't know if you know this, but the first time, do you know the first time that you were on the show?
Oh, my God. That had to be like 2 years. No, that was like 4 years ago, wasn't it?
It was 4 years ago, the day after President Obama was elected.
Yeah, I was in Denver. That makes all sense now.
Look at that. So what we are now here, you know, mere hours past this year's election. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling pretty optimistic.
Okay.
And I'm very happy that that he's getting a chance to have a second term because, I don't know, I mean, as much as I hear from other people, especially on the other side of the aisle, you know how things can't turn around quickly. It's kind of funny that they don't think after all this work that this could turn around a lot quicker than the last 4 years.
Yeah.
Not that Mitt Romney was going to get into office and things were going to change January 2nd, which is a little absurd to think.
Right.
But, I don't know. I think it takes a while to stop the way things were running, to halt, and then turn around and go in the right direction. And I think, I don't know, I think the nation really understood that.
Yeah, that's the hope. That's the hope. Now, I don't know if everybody knows this, but tell everyone what state you are in.
I am in Tulsa, an extremely red state.
Yeah, Oklahoma is
Oklahoma.
Tulsa's its own land. But
just answering that question all day. Where do you live, Tulsa?
But just to clue folks in. Yeah, you guys are there is nary a blue county to be found in Oklahoma, and I was reading up on Oklahoma today and in just this week's election. There was an anti-affirmative action ordinance law that was passed. And Oklahoma, not one of the more accepting states when it comes to marriage licenses for same-sex couples. That's written in the Constitution that that can happen. Tell us about Oklahoma. Is this a state you would sell to the other gays to come visit?
You know, I would. It's very interesting. Like, and I know this sounds a little off topic, but for some reason my mind kind of went to research the recent shooting of Malala, I think it's Yousafzai.
Okay.
In Pakistan. Do you know who this is?
I don't.
The girl that was shot.
Oh, yes. Yes, of course.
The 14-year-old girl that was shot for her freedom of speech because she just wanted to learn. And she lives in the Swat Valley, and she was saying, you know, I love this place. It's beautiful. You know, I have a lot of history here. Same with her father saying that, too. You know, he owns a girls' school that has been there for, like, over 14 years. And watching, you know, all this kind of go down where she, you know, spoke out about having the right to or wanting to have the opportunity to be educated, and then, you know, the Taliban gets on a bus, you know, that she's going to school on and then shoots her. And she's still alive.
Yeah.
You know, and she still has a voice. And to me, you know, people will probably say to her, and they did in a little documentary I watched today, where it's like, why do you stay there?
Right.
You know, why does your family want to be there? And there, she said, you know, you want to make changes, and you can't do that from outside. You got to do it from inside. And to me, that's how I feel about Oklahoma, is like if all the people that were like me left, and all the LGBT people didn't care and just abandoned it, you know, what happens to the very few people that can't leave?
Right. Are you in that statement announcing your candidacy for any office there in Oklahoma? Because that's what I heard.
Yeah, no. I helped out a little bit by playing one of the fundraisers for the Democratic congressman who was running here. And it went to Republicans.
Yeah.
You know, in our county. So, I don't know. And I feel like maybe one day that was something I would work on, but as of right now, I'm still trying to figure out how this whole system works.
Right. Well, I don't think understanding it needs to be a prerequisite for running. But when when you are ready for that endorsement, you come running to us, and we will break that news here.
You guys have championed me quite a bit, so thank you.
And speaking of championing your efforts, you got a whole band together, and you want people to fund a new album.
Yeah, there was always this idea when people would say to me, like, when you make it big or when you get to the next level, remember me. And this would be people that I met that moment. You know, I'm like, I remember you now.
Yeah.
You're standing right in front of me. but people are always like, you know, assuming that one day, you know, you get on a record label and that's when there's all this money behind you and you can actually do what you are meaning to do. But for me, my journey has always been independent and always been trying to put out my music in a genuine way, you know, with the money that I had, not trying to really go after too much.
Right.
But with the CD and the music that I was writing, I switched to piano from acoustic guitar, and I've been writing most of these songs on piano. I thought, you know, it really lended itself to the band that I used for Queen, like our Queen cover show.
Yeah.
Which was my drummer, bass player, guitar player, and then two backup girls, Tina and Tylisha. And then I added a horn section of two saxophone players and a trumpet player, and it just, you know, that's nine people. So the sound got really big, and I thought, you know, it's going to take... Yeah, it's going to take more money than I've ever collected to put out my solo stuff in a way to put out this big band sound. But instead of waiting for somebody to come along and do it, I tried using PledgeMusic.com, which is like Kickstarter, and had, you know, left it to everybody else to want to be a part. And that way it's not just a singular thing. I mean, we had nine people in this band. You know, it takes a little bit of extra help, and so
yeah.
Far we're already a third of our way to our goal, and we still have about 40 days.
And people have had amazing success with this. Our good buddy Susan Werner did her Pledge Music Drive, and it just, that thing took off, and with money to spare. So it's a really exciting way of getting people, you know, to be a part of the project, but also excited for the project.
Yeah, and you offer exclusives that people really can't get anywhere else. I do my little online cooking show, and I decided to do about 20 hand-done cookbooks, you know, that'll have kind of some of my backstory and a bunch of my recipes that I've been using for quite some time, and put it into, like, a really neat little book. And I'm only making 20 of those, even giving away the Queen show that we did back in July. We taped it, and it sounds amazing. So as a digital download, you can get that whole night's worth of music.
Nice.
So there's some pretty fun exclusives in there, all the way up to one of my guitars.
I did my pledge. I'm getting a signed CD and a tuxedo T-shirt.
Yes, because the CD is called Formal, because we're adding, I feel like my little slogan for this CD is that I'm dressing up my sound.
Nice.
So we ended up doing a show last Friday in town, like a little CD preview, and played some of the new songs. You can see that on my Facebook, on my YouTube page under Eric Hyman. And you'll see we did a bunch of new songs. We even did some Amy Winehouse, and all nine of us were on stage. You know, the horn section blaring. And we even dressed up in tuxedo vests and bow ties.
Nice.
That's the girls. They wore a nice, pretty dress.
They could have been in tuxedos and bow ties. That would have been lovely. Now, what is your comfort level? You've done so many solo shows, and certainly when it was Eric and the Adams, there were a couple other people there, but this is a full band. What's your comfort level in being that band leader for a big old group?
It takes a lot more work, especially, you know, with that many personalities and that much character. But I feel like the idea is to bring the song forward. We had one song called The Only Way, and then another one called How Can You Sleep, that, you know, I sat down and I wrote on piano, and then I took it to my three guys first, my drums, bass, and guitar, and then we kind of figured out an arrangement, and then the girls came into that, and then I had my saxophone player, Ryan Tedder, put together all the horn parts, and then once it all together, I mean, it sounds amazing.
Nice.
I try not to stifle anybody's arrangement of what they bring. I feel like the best thing to do is hire the best people around to be in your band, you know, like to find all those people that play very well, and then trust their opinion about the music, and that way you're not constantly over somebody's shoulder going, no, I don't like that, maybe you could do this. You know, everybody's been top notch. I have to tell them, like, no, that's great, leave it.
Stop changing things. We really like it.
No, I know. It's like I get used to stuff very quickly, and I'm like, oh, no, that's perfect. The first thing you did was the best.
Awesome. That's awesome. Look how you're a supportive band leader. Do you cook for everyone?
I try to be. I do cook for everybody. We've had practices at my house, and just had a fall party over at my drummer's house the other night. And I don't know. I think it's fun. Like, it's very familiar to be able to have everybody over, and we're doing music, and then, you know, I come around from the kitchen and have something for everybody, and everybody's so appreciative.
Oh, yeah.
So
feed the masses.
I like that community feeling of having that many people around.
Now, you mentioned the Queen show, and I have to tell you, my standards for covers of Under Pressure, they're very high, Eric. I have very high standards for Under Pressure. And as you saw, I wrote to you immediately upon hearing it because I thought it was the cover that you guys did was fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
Talk to me about channeling Freddie Mercury. Like, what did you tap into to do that whole Queen performance?
You know, I've never really considered myself an actor, and this, in the last, like, 6 months, I, you know, was very close to the acting role of Freddie Mercury, and, I got a part in an independent film up in Kansas, so I don't know how this happened, but I've never really considered myself an actor, but it was a huge challenge to not only just, you know, be a night of just singing Queen songs and pretending, like, you know, to be somewhat into it. I mean, I dressed the part. I grew out a mustache. You know, I watched a lot of videos of how he moved and little things, because I thought it would be neat at the show for people to get a sense of maybe he's here in a way.
Yeah.
You know, I sang it the best that I could and really tried to hit all the notes that Freddie did. And, you know, just did little things like the half mic stand or some of his stances, because he walked around very proudful.
Yeah.
Like, very proud. And I don't know. I thought it would be neat for one night to kind of exist outside of myself and be a little more theatrical.
What is the music scene missing without Freddie Mercury? For those maybe our younger listeners who just don't know the music of Queen or really don't know much about Freddie Mercury, extol the virtues of Freddie Mercury. What are we missing without him here on this planet right now?
With the writing, and especially because he did a lot of writing. He wrote on the piano a lot. I don't know if people realize as much of a part of the music as he was, you know, because he was such the front man and usually out there. But he wrote a lot of that music. And for instance, like Crazy Little Thing Called Love and different stuff, even the simplest songs are very dynamic. Like, that's something I think Freddie Mercury really brought to music, as well as Brian May and the rest of Queen. But I think they were just an extremely dynamic band. You know, it all worked, but they were all playing something a little bit different.
Right.
You know, their attack was all on different levels. And the amount of vocals and harmonies that Freddie Mercury brought in, I was like, there's no way I can do this on my own. That's why I had to bring in extra singing help. In fact, we had part of the Tulsa Opera Choir.
Wow.
We had about 4 members to sing Somebody to Love and Bohemian Rhapsody.
Do you need a choir for those?
Yeah, and you can't really, like, even when I see Queen now, whether they're singing with Adam Lambert or the new experience that they put together, you know, even in certain parts, like the Bohemian Rhapsody's, you know, middle part with, oh, Mamma Mia, Mom, like that whole part.
Yeah.
They don't even do that. They walk off stage and a recording plays it.
Oh.
So I thought, if we're going to do it, we really have to do it. You can't kind of half-ass stuff like that.
Yeah, you walked away from that night feeling like, we did this. You know, you could just tell from your emails and from what you've put out there online. It was great to just, for those of us who weren't there and didn't experience it, you certainly had the sense that you guys felt like we went all in on this.
Yeah, I really, like, I've never been more proud of the people that I played with in that show, because it's, when you put your own version of things on you know, on the stage and we all play it live, you know, there's a lot of room for interpretation. But when you play something as iconic as the music of Queen, I feel like if parts are not played, you really didn't do it. You know, you didn't do it the justice that it needs.
And we should say, given that this show is so gay, what part of Freddie Mercury being gay and his presence on stage, how do you see those two things being tied together?
The thing that I love about that is that I don't feel like he was defined by being gay.
Yeah.
Like, their music, and I feel a similarity in that with him, in that I don't really sing so much about the gay experience. I sing about my experience.
Right.
And you know, I feel like a lot of people say, you know, I just an artist and I happen to be gay. I feel like 50-50. Like, I want people to know and I want to be very proud of it, and sometimes I want to address it because I feel like we're in such a social world about it right now.
Right.
When it comes to it being, you know, a big issue that people are voting on. A lot of people who aren't even gay are voting on this, you know?
Yeah.
And, yeah. And to me, and then part of me doesn't want to be defined by it in a way that I can't do certain things because, oh, you're gay. Like, they won't believe you if you're in a movie and you're with a girl or if you're, you know, just different things like that. I don't want to be defined by it in a way that's typecasting. And
right.
I think a lot of actors have that problem that they work with. But I also want to be very proud to be part of a community.
Right, and I mean, it will inevitably come up when you call back into us in a couple months and for the 49th appearance and you announce your candidacy for whatever office you're seeking. It's going to come up. It's going to come up.
Well, it is, and I feel it is such a political thing right now, and I feel like honestly, I feel like it's a little bit less of a political thing, and the topic of gay marriage didn't seem to be so much on the forefront of this election. The way that I felt like it did last time with
right.
Trump 8 being in the mix. You know, but this time, like, 4 states, you know, passed marriage equality, and, I mean, that's huge.
That is huge.
Without it being, like, such a big topic between the presidential candidates. I mean, they didn't even mention it once during any of the debates.
None of them. The 3 presidential ones, the vice presidential one, it did not come up once.
Yeah, and it still passed.
Exactly.
I mean, that's very interesting to me. Like, I feel like when you don't put it out there in a way that, you know, that's so polarizing, I feel like people do the right thing and they vote for equality.
Yeah. Especially when they're able to just humanize it and just put faces to legislation. It's a good thing. But there is still some work to do there in Oklahoma. So you got to get started. But one way that you affect tons of people, we would be remiss if we did not talk about your chef-tacular skills. When is the next episode of Trial and Eric coming out?
The next episode of Trial and Eric will be on Monday, November, I think it's 18th.
Okay.
Which is
Monday the 19th.
Monday, November 19th. Yeah, me and a friend of mine who's always giving me crap in town about, like, you know, we need to have a cook-off. I cook really well. His name is Isaac Rocha, and I think it's going to be fun because...
This is a little bit of a throwdown.
I know, it's a big throwdown, and I'm not usually, like, people are usually very sweet about it, but he was at our show on Friday, and he's like, me and you, cook off.
Wow.
So I said, all right, I'm going to make it one of my Trial and Eric shows, so get ready. And he's like, oh, if that's the case, then we're making meatballs, because I make the best meatballs ever. And I was like, we're on.
You're going to throw some elbows.
Yeah. And I have something to prove, especially after all this cooking and all these shows and even cooking on our NBC affiliate here in Tulsa.
I love it.
I can't be shut down.
Just so folks know, I watched an episode. I've watched many episodes. Eric taught me how to make Chick-fil-A.
Yeah. I saw a few different recipes online that were based on Chick-fil-A style chicken. You know, whether it's the nuggets or the sandwich, the fried sandwich. And I thought it would be neat to kind of see which ones taste most like it without actually having to go to Chick-fil-A
right.
dealing with their politics.
What was so funny to me about watching it was, and it really entertained me immensely, was so obviously there's this recipe that you're trying to get through to get the product out there in a timely way on the webisode. But then at the same time, you're also trying to validate all the people who are writing in and respond to them. And it was just,
yeah.
It's hilarious to watch you bounce it back and forth between those two things.
Well, that's the whole thing I love about the whole show, to be quite honest, is that people can, it's in real time and people can connect with me and ask me questions at that exact moment. And I love that because it's hard when you're doing a live show and you don't know who's listening or who's even paying attention.
Right.
So to have this constant stream of people like, you know, so what did you do? So how did that go? Where's, you know, how much did you add? It's just awesome. I loved it.
I'm the guy who's writing it, but can you do it with tofu? I think I wrote that like three times. It was good times.
I haven't.
So this is going to be Monday, November 19th, a little bit of a throwdown. He's doing meatballs. What, do you know what you're doing?
No, we're both doing meatballs.
You're both? Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then we're bringing in a few different people to taste test.
Nice.
Bipartisan people.
There should be some opportunity for the people watching to vote in some way. I know taste is important, but maybe we can vote on presentation.
Oh, yeah. That's true. Like, I should make a few different pieces of it. You've always helped me with some of these things. I feel like the last time we talked, you gave me some great ideas.
I came up with the tattoo tour for the DVD.
Yeah, you did. It was all you.
I'm here to help.
I made it on there.
I'm making a difference in this world. Well, the new album is going to be called Formal. It is called Formal. You can stroll on over to pledgemusic.com/projects/Eric Hyman Band. We will, of course, link to it right there on our This Show Is So Gay episode page. What's the timing here? So when will we have this in our hands?
You will probably have the CD in your hands, hopefully in February.
Awesome.
The exclusives will be fulfilled by then for the, you know, the cookbooks and the concerts and the trial and error Skype and all that kind of stuff. But the actual CD we're working on now, so it's we want to get it all nice and fitted with 9 people. It takes a second, but you will get, for $10 up, you get the digital download of the full CD called Formal. And then it goes up from there to get like physical copies and signed copies of the t-shirts and so much more.
And to confirm for folks, say you've already pledged your $30 to get the CD and the t-shirt. There's nothing that stops you from, say, pledging another $75 to get the cookbook, right?
No, nothing stops you at all.
Okay.
In fact, you know, we're trying to raise, you know, a good amount of money in order to not only put out the CD, but also tour up into your area.
Nice.
On it. And hopefully in late February to April. You don't just get the CD, but you get our little tour, and hopefully get to see it in person.
Awesome. Awesome. Eric Hyman, you got to know that we adore you here at This Show Is So Gay.
Oh, and I adore you guys. Thank you for always helping and your ideas and... You guys are just great.
Well, we love to support everything that you're doing. So, folks, stroll on over. You will see the link right there on our website and pledge some money. Pledge some money and help out, because this is how we all come together as a community and support the arts and support people's energy to put different voices out there. Eric Hyman, sir, please keep doing what you're doing. And best of luck in the meatball cook-off. We're looking forward to watching it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how nasty that's going to get.
See, I think it would just be hilarious if every time he turned away from the camera, you slipped in Tabasco sauce and winked at us. I just think that would work. I'm just saying.
I don't like to play dirty, but this isn't music. This is cooking. It's a whole different
ballgame. There
we go. I don't know. If I take your advice, I'm holding you responsible.
I'm just saying it could play out like a nice vaudeville routine. It's more about us being entertained. And you get to win. Eric Hyman, always a pleasure. Please keep doing what you're doing, sir.
Oh, you too. Thank you so much, and I'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon, Eric. Bye. All right, that about wraps things up for this week's episode of This Show Is So Gay. What an election. My gosh, we could just do hours and hours on all the various gay angles of this election. You start out with President Barack Obama being reelected, and obviously that's huge because he represents so much more progress and more possibility than his opponent ever could. He's been called the ally-in-chief, the most pro-equality president ever, so that's just fantastic and huge. Then you turn your eyes to Wisconsin, where I don't know that it gets much bigger, folks, than Tammy Baldwin becoming the first ever out United States gay senator. She had already become, back in 1998, the first woman in Wisconsin's history to be elected to the U.S. House of Representatives and the first openly gay non-incumbent elected to Congress in American history. And now she is our first gay senator. Jared Polis out there in Colorado, he was reelected. Love that. David Cicilline in Rhode Island, he was reelected. That's fantastic. And then we look at New York, Sean Patrick Maloney. And that was an interesting race there in New York because that was one of the first times that the gay community and the straight community was being asked to choose between two people who really, two candidates who both supported gay rights. So the New Yorkers there back in my home state of New York, I'm really from New Jersey, but I say New York, Sean Patrick Maloney elected there in New York. Mark Pocan, he was elected to, he's out gay male, elected to Tammy Baldwin's former post of a congressperson there in Wisconsin. So fantastic. Then you have all the various ballot initiatives. And if you're not keeping up on those, go look what happened in Maryland. Go look what happened in Maine. Go look what happened in Washington. Those votes have been counted. These are just fantastic. There's no stopping this tide at this point. There is no stopping this tide at this point. This is the way the country is going. This is what a majority of Americans feel, and it's only just going to continue to get better and be better for equality. And we will, of course, continue to cover it here on This Show Is So Gay, where you can drop us an email. Send it on over to Ken at thisshowisogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com. We have amazing guests coming up in the next couple of weeks, so learn all about that. And, of course, go to Facebook and join the thousands of people there. I got to get out of here. What a week. This is your host, Ken Schneck, signing off with you all, telling you, use your voice to do what you know how to do to make lives better for those around you. Raise up the voices of your brothers and sisters in our communities. And, of course, while you're doing all this, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?